Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this very special edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Due to technical difficulties, we have had to pre-record this show behind the scenes. Now, Christchurch has had a major, major earthquake, 6.3 on the Richter scale at a depth of 5 kilometres. Very shallow, very hard shaking indeedy-do. And I do, in fact, have a special report here. It's a quick 5-minute clip from a friend of mine, Jeff, in Christchurch, in the epicenter of the earthquake, who I talked to earlier this morning, and it seems that media all over the country are just absolutely going to live broadcasts, and it's getting incredibly boring because they're watching the exact same clips over and over and over again. And I don't know, maybe this is a good thing for our fabulous tyrannical government, you know, because in a time of crisis, everybody turns to the fabulous John Key to save them. Well, maybe that's just me being cynical, but, you know, I have heard a rumour that James Bond and from MI5 is cruising down to Christchurch to get himself a martini just the way he likes it, shaken and not stirred. So without further ado, I'm just going to play for you here this little clip that we did. It's 5 minutes, and then we are going to have Stan Deo on for some comments on this. Hold on one moment, ladies and gentlemen. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. We have a very special guest on the line right now. His name is Jeff, coming at us live from the earthquake zone in Christchurch. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Now, please tell us a little bit about what happened. Where were you when the quake struck?
Oh, well, I was at home in the second floor, and fortunately nothing in the room I was in fell down, so quite lucky there.
Okay. And around you, your neighbours, the rest of the city, I mean, what's the situation around you?
I haven't really slept here, but anyway, with my neighbours, some of them have just gone on a road trip out of town. We also live next to someone who was in the 4/5 bar building, which was in the news, where the stairs collapsed. And the day it happened, I went biking, which was an absolute nightmare. The roads were completely blocked everywhere. And there was some liquefaction, some silt and water coming out of the road near Canterbury University. So definitely a lot worse than the previous quake.
Yeah. I mean, well, what's your comparison towards the previous quake and this one? Because seismologists did warn, in fact, that there would be another quake of reasonable scale following the original one.
Right, well, the comparison, well, the previous one was a lot less violent. We didn't have things breaking, but in this one, we've had things falling over. There was a pot smashed quite badly, and also a very, very heavy stone or ceramic ornament that's out in our courtyard managed to fall over and break, and that's something, it's I don't know, a metre or so high, and it's pretty heavy. You wouldn't be able to lift it or anything like that, and that's been knocked over. So there's a lot of force and a lot of things falling over in my room. Power tripped out as usual. And I guess the scary thing is seeing liquefaction on the west side of town. That is near the rivers, though.
And do you have running water or general electricity restored?
Well, we've got electricity. Somehow my computer survived, even though it was on during the quake. So, yeah, electricity, cell phone coverage, and it's responsive too. I just got a text from someone, and I just sent it to them. I know 20 minutes prior I've already got a response. So the electricity is all working out nicely, but there's no running water, and if we do get running water, it's going to be contaminated for weeks. And the east side of town is totally out. electricity-wise, it could take weeks, or it will take weeks to get the power there working. And it is an absolute nightmare not having running water. I'm just tempted to get out of the city, but I don't know.
Well, that would be my recommendation. I mean, I called my sister up later on last year to tell her to get out of the city, because with the liquefaction, the earthquakes, and then the what I knew was I knew this one was would be coming as well, because you know, the government told us it would be, but obviously they didn't repeat it enough. Yeah, I just told her to basically migrate out of the city, because well, the economy's never really going to recover fully from this, and it's going to kind of be the dyed in the wool hardcore Christchurchians that will stay.
Yeah, I agree. It's very tempting to go in just between now and when things get better. But on the long term, I don't know, it would be nice to move out of the city, because all the I don't know, weird thieving and wife beating will probably show itself in the months ahead. And I don't think the city is going to be the same for quite a while.
Indeed.
And also disruptions and everything. It's bad enough. Just last week, with roads being blocked off and buses being delayed and routes changing and things, but I've got to stay to complete my course when that sets up again. And I don't know, maybe I might disappear off to somewhere else next year. We'll see.
Yeah. All right, Jeff. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. Well, see, the Christchurch quake is, big news all around the world. Indeed, it's one of the top stories on StanDeo.com, and we welcome Stan to the show right now. Stan, welcome back.
Glad to be here, but under these circumstances, I'm sure sorry for you guys. I know much worse is coming.
Well, do you? Well, that's news.
Oh, yes, sir.
That's news to me, so if you could, I'd really love to hear your take on this.
Well, now, you know, Vinny, if I tell you what the reason I say this, I'm going to get, you know, cards and letters from your government there and from the New Zealand Tourism Department. Last time I said this over the air, they told me never to come back to New Zealand because it hurt tourism. Now, but what I've got to say seriously is really quite heavy, and even a Maori kahuna woman there in the North Island has, since I said it on the air back years ago, has come and said that there's going to be a sign in China before what I'm going to tell you about happens, so you'll have a little bit of warning in the North Island. But the North Island is going to get real serious when this happens. You may know, if you look at the earthquake monitoring people there at Taupo, I forget the three-letter code for them, but they have up on their website a map of North and South Island showing the stresses on the fault line, which runs through Christchurch and up the west coast of North Island. But it is an unusual thing. The only one I think that exists on the surface of the earth, in that the island, both islands, are being twisted and pulled in two different directions. It's not just a simple slip. It's a very complex thing. And they say over the last 20 million years, it's moved so many miles and this kind of stuff, and they show a little animation of it. But quite honestly, it's about to move even more than it has. Now, I'm going to start with a dream vision I had, many years ago when I was still in Australia. And that dream vision was one of several that I had. I had a couple on Lake Taupo and a massive, massive eruption, that whole caldera, before I even know what Lake Taupo, before I knew what it was or the name of it or anything. I'd never been to New Zealand at that time, and I lived over in Perth.
I've heard this word caldera before. What does it mean?
Well, it's a hole left by sometimes several volcanoes that have erupted but fallen down into one crater rim. Lake Taupo, if you took the water out underneath, would be the mouth of a huge crater, a volcanic crater, and it would be like a super volcano. The last time it erupted was in about 87 AD, and when it did, it threw up so much debris in the atmosphere that Chinese astronomers in the Northern Hemisphere recorded 3 days of total darkness from the ash fallout up there. I mean, it was horrific. And the dream vision that I had, you know, in fact, I'll see if I, it's on our website, under dream visions up there at the top. And it was in 1997 and I had that dream vision and put it up, you know, eventually on a website after it had already, I'd already gone over and found out where the dream vision was talking about, because before I went to New Zealand to do a lecture and actually went to Taupo, I wasn't sure of what I had seen or where it was. Now, okay, what I saw, gosh, I'm trying to look at this dream vision here. I've got two of them up here. All right. Okay. All right, I'll just read you what I wrote on the website. That'll be the simplest thing. A few days after the dream that I had, the first dream about, you know, immigration and stuff, which was over to New Zealand for a lecture I was going to do. I didn't know it was, but that's the first part of the dream. This is the part that counts. Holly and I were visited unexpectedly by a lady that we did not know who had come to buy a copy of one of our books from us at home. In the course of our conversation, we discovered that she had been born and raised in New Zealand. I then asked her if she knew of a place in New Zealand that was like a big crater lake where there was steam coming up through the water and there was a tourist resort nearby. Without hesitation, she said there was only one place she could think of, and that was Lake Taupo in the North Island. And after she left, I got on the internet and downloaded, you know, everything I could find on Taupo. And it wasn't, you know, very much that day. And I began to wonder why I'd have such a, you know, like a clear dream about this in color, and it was very specific. And I'd never even seen or studied from a distance, you know, New Zealand. It was just off my radar. It was across the pond, and that was it. Now, I did look, and I found a resort center, and it was on a crater lake, and it was close to the Ruapehu volcano. Of course, Lake Taupo was right there next to it. Other than that, I'd found little else to make me, you know, spend more time in reflection or look at it. Until about 8 months later, I think it was in 98, Holly and I were in Auckland. I had to do a lecture there at the university, and we were deciding we would visit down through to Taupo to see if it fit the dream vision I had. So we went down there, and we stopped right at the edge of Taupo, the city, before we went in. And she says, "All right, now I want you to tell me exactly what you saw in the dream vision again, word for word. And so we'll go in. We'll go in and see. We'll drive into to Taupo and see if this." What you saw in your dream vision is there. And, of course, there was a restaurant there. And now I'll tell you the dream. So before we go into the Taupo to see what we saw. Okay. Now, it says here, I was particularly annoyed because Holly and I were delayed in the dream from going overseas to New Zealand. Now, at this time that I had the dream in early 97, we had no idea I was going to New Zealand, and I was annoyed because my son Joshua was, you know, outside looking for something, and that he lost, and he was delaying our leaving to go to New Zealand, which I didn't know we were going to do. Now, anyway, in the dream, suddenly Holly and I were in New Zealand, and at the time I wasn't sure exactly where we were, but I knew we were somewhere, and turned out to be New Zealand and near Taupo. I found us standing on the side of a small sloping hillside, which extended up to our right side. And if you've been to Taupo, you know that motel that sits right on the north rim there. That's what we saw. At that time, it was under a different management, different name, but that's where we were standing looking westward. There were palm trees around the motel and some pine trees scattered along the hillside. And we were actually standing on a road which separated the higher ground on our right, where residences were, from the lower ground on the left, and it was morning. The sun was shining, and there was a long motel to our left and beneath the road height. You had to look down on it. We had to descend a short way to walk into the office of the motel in the dream. It was a sort of Spanish-style decor with orange roof tiles and a light-colored wall, you know, like stucco would be. It kind of felt Mediterranean because of the porticos and two main levels with a sunken area below in the middle of the hotel. That was the dining area and the bar. Now, I went ahead of Holly in the dream, entered into the motel from the street level. I could not find any staff there in the foyer, so I wandered down the hallway to an open door where I found the staff all sitting on top of the tables and bars to keep their feet from getting wet from the hot water. They told me the water had become warm and had risen during the night. It had flooded the sunken bar area and most of the restaurant where they were sitting on the bars and tables. They said it would kill the tourist trade, and they were saddened by this. Yeah, the tourist bureaus hear this. Then I realized we were in a motel on the edge of a crater lake as I saw the steam venting up from the water outside the windows of the restaurant. I could see out into the blue lake through the upper half of the windows and through an open doorway, and at the lower end of the restaurant. To the left of this view was a small peninsula which jutted into the view. You know, it had buildings on it, and it was around the edge of the lake, so there's some of the lake between us. And there were several small boats and yachts kind of all moored there. The water level had risen suddenly during the night before, and the people were lost to know what to do next. I knew that we did not want to stay there, and after that, because I knew I was there, was going to be more violent activity from the crater, so Holly and I left the motel, and I awoke. Now, that part of it, actually, we were at the edge of Taupo, actually going over there now, and this is the dream that I recounted to her. And, as we drove down that road on the north side of the caldera, sure enough, there was the road, there was the motel, and I went into the motel, ahead of Holly, and there happened to be two people there at the check-in desk, two ladies, and I asked them, if they'd had any problem with heating of the water, and she says, it's funny you'd ask, but we've been having trouble with our floor safe being so hot, we had to use gloves to get into it. And the tenants, the guests, clients down at the far end of the motel have been ringing and asking to turn down the heat. Well, of course, we had to tell them we don't have heat in the rooms. It was the ground. And that evening, Holly and I walked out onto the sand behind the motel, and there was steam coming up by our feet. We weren't barefoot, but I said to her, I think maybe we ought to go back to Auckland. This is looking like it's going to happen now. And I had another dream following the second one, and it showed me a small doorway-looking thing, and I realized what it was. It was an outlined doorway like in a map that you'd get at the gas stations or petrol stations there in Taupo, and it was an outline. I remember it was a really weird outline, and when I saw this map in the petrol station there, I realized that's what I saw was that map of Taupo looking from the north to the south. And it was like a doorway that opened up, and all that was going to be sucked in, and then a mighty explosion. I guess a crack will open up and Lake Taupo will fall down into a hot area and then explode, huge explosion. Now, if I were the only one that had this dream or something like it, and if I were the only one, that was warning about it, I wouldn't put much credence in it, but we've had phone calls and emails over the last 15 years from people in North Island, Christian people, most of them, but some of other faiths, and some of the like the Maori Kahuna lady, intermediary lady, a New Zealand citizen, to actually send me the details. She would call it in. All of them are saying the same thing. They've had dream visions. The Maori woman has had a vision when there's going to be a huge, huge explosion, and it's going to be worse than the one that was north of Rotorua there, two centuries ago, that left all that pink stuff, on the steps up there. Now, she said, the Maori woman said, look, before this happens, there will be a scandal up in China. It will be over a failure of a part of a big dam, and logs and wood that they've used for it will be substandard, and it will be a result of some of the people that had the money to were told to do the job using substandard lumber so they could pocket the profit. And it's going to kill a lot of people. When this happens and that part of the dam up there, it's a tributary, I think, fails, and landslides kill a lot of people, and they're investigated, and there's a big stink about the corruption. When that happens, know that the Lake Taupo eruption is about to happen. So that's the only timing or dating that we can have. And the Three Gorges Dam is probably what she's talking about, I guess. And it wasn't even finished at the time. Now it's finished, and it's been very dry. Now, if we get a lot of rain in that area, flooding, mudslides, I don't know what could cause earthquakes, something may happen to cause that scandal to appear. If it does happen, I would certainly think about heading to the north, of the uttermost north of the North Island, or some of the places in the South Island. I think both islands are going to suffer from it, but the Maori do expect it to happen. So that's my good news for you.
Well, great. So we're going to experience some mad destruction. Now, what was the event that you said would happen in China before this one would take place?
Well, what I was talking about, that scandal will come because of a dam failure or a tributary dam failure to the large dam, which is Three Gorges Dam. And it'll be in the world news that somebody there or some group of guys pocketed money and used substandard wood to build a dike or something like that. And it will fail because of that, and a lot of people will die in China, and that will be the signal that shortly thereafter, then the Taupo eruption will happen. And look, there have been Christian folks that have said they've seen the big boulders flying toward their homes in their dream visions of it. They live in North Island, so I'm not the only one that's been seeing this. And when the Maori told us that, you know, when the Kahuna did, I didn't have any trouble believing that, because they're indigenous. They know the land. They're really close, spiritually with the land. And when they tell me that, it's just like if the Hopi tell me something's going to happen, I think it's going to happen.
Okay. And what's your take on the recent Christchurch quake?
Well, that's part of that twisting moment I was talking about that you can see. It's at the GNS Center, the Geophysical Nuclear Science Station there. We actually visited them there at Taupo. And at the time when I made the announcement over the radio, it was in an American show with Coast to Coast. It got back to the tourism department. Everybody was mad. And But what happened as a result of it was, after visiting the GNS guys there, I realized they didn't have enough money for the equipment they needed to monitor Lake Taupo properly, and they couldn't get a budget for it. Well, because of the furor that came up after I made that announcement back in 97, 98, the government did give them a budget, and they had enough money to get to rent the German Yellow Submarine and put it down there and start mapping and monitoring and put in extra warning sensors. So they were able to do what they need to do to give you early warning. Before that, you didn't have early warning. So we're trying to, do our best to help limit damage and death. I did see that a lot of people are going to die in this, and some soldiers saw soldier uniforms on some of the dead bodies, and just visitors, tourists. It's going to catch a lot of people by surprise when it hits. But anyway, just keep your ears open. There was an FM radio station here in Taupo that communicated with us a long time after that, and every time they had a little bump in the night, they were wondering if that was it.
give us their contact details. Maybe they'll syndicate the Vinnie Eastwood show.
Well, I'm sure they'd be interested. Yeah, they're good guys. But I don't know. I, from the number of aftershocks that have occurred, I am impressed. Chile had some 600 or 700 quakes here in the last 12 months, and Chile is the worst place on the planet at the moment for plate tectonic quakes and things of that nature. But when the big quakes occur, that keeps ringing like a bell. It vibrates for months after that, and that's called aftershocks. And now you've already had a bunch of aftershocks down in Christchurch, and from this recent 6 point whatever it was. And because it's vibrating like that, that's starting to worry me, because it's starting to look like an early stages of what we saw over in Chile from February of last year till now. In fact, have you got a computer up, Vinny?
Oh, yeah.
Can you go to my website and click on it's a show right under Vinny Eastwood Show. It's a Kevin Smith show. Click on the right side where it says Show Images, and scroll down when you get there toward the bottom, and you'll see the Chilean earthquakes and the New Zealand earthquakes displayed in big form. If you just click on it, you'll see what I'm talking about. Can you do that?
Yeah, just looking at it now.
Well, you can see that New Zealand and the whole ring of fire, or arc of fire, going all the way up in Indonesia, has been busy in the last 14 months.
Yeah, that's, it certainly looks like it. It's like a soundboard lighting up.
Yeah. So the United States is not exempt from this either. That's the right map. You guys got your problems. We've got ours. The New Madrid fault line may or may not go, but there's been an intense number of quakes in Arkansas and over in Oklahoma, which is just right above Texas. And over on the left side, you see all those in Southern California. That is part of another set of earthquakes to the right of it, in a kind of a zigzag line a little bit, going up into Yellowstone.
Now, and you mentioned the New Madrid fault line. This is one that's it starts at the bottom of the Mississippi, very, very close to where this Gulf of Oil Kano crisis started, and it runs all the way up to the Great Lakes. Now, how long has that fault line been known about?
Well, since the 1800s for sure, when it released and a Richter 8 some odd. And if it had happened today, tens of millions would have died. But because it was early days of the United States and most of the settlement was to the east of that in the colonies, it did make the Mississippi run backward in certain places, and it formed an island that trapped a lot of game on it that Davy Crockett actually mentioned in his memoirs, because he found that little island with all the trapped animals from the New Madrid Fault, which had made a river around it, and he hunted it for a good game. And so that's kind of when it was reported, back in those days.
Mm-hmm. And more recently, I mean, I watched a video that a guy did, I think it was about 30, 40 minutes long, explaining that the New Madrid fault line is now having oil from the Gulf of Oil Kano crisis actually making its way into the fault line and lubricating it, threatening to make it shake up all over again. And there was also an image that he put on that from your website, Stan, showing what could possibly happen if that did take place, where a huge column of water would now basically penetrate the central United States there and cut off the eastern seaboard from the central United States.
Yes. What I did, the map he used is one that I did after we visited with the Hopi, and they were telling us that there would be water intrusions in their area up to 5,300 feet, because they would be going between the mesas by canoe when the earth changes do take effect. Now, as far as the lubrication part of the water intrusion up to the Great Lakes, I don't know whether that's happening. I mean, I didn't see the report or the information that your source said, but I do know that there's been a lot of discussion, rumors, but some of them from very informed people from within the cleanup, that have said that the oil that has been taken out of the Gulf over the last 100 years or so has left large vacant spaces. They haven't backfilled it all with water, which is, you know, water flooding. They haven't done it to all of them, which leaves cavities down underneath there that weaken the whole floor structure of the Gulf of Mexico. So if there's oil leaking from that that last thing that you know, the Gulf oil crisis, if there's still oil leaking or not coming to the surface but going into the faults, it might actually feed into that fault. I see what he's saying, and perhaps lubricated, but I have no solid information on that. My biggest concern is for sudden collapse of parts of the Gulf of Mexico seafloor when an earthquake comes, and it weakens the already weakened structure where they've taken oil out and left cavities in the rocks, you know caves, cavities and pores and things like that. If it breaks easily and subsides rapidly, it could put a tsunami right up all along the Gulf Coast and down into Cuba as well, and to Mexican coast and all the way down to the peninsula curving up around into the Gulf near Cuba. So I am concerned about that. The map that the guy used is one where I dropped the sea level, or sorry, raised the sea level 200 feet. The official estimate for the next 100 years or 90 years, I guess it is, in the newspapers by officialdom is that they expect the water levels to rise maybe 1 meter. And that would cause 7 to 9% of the homes on the coast of the United States, both coasts, to be sunk, you know, over the next 90 years. That's their official story. But believe me, there's more water available than they're telling you about. And there's a heap of water underneath the surface of the earth in the what's called the Moho discontinuity. It's a shell of water. It's got a lot of salts in it. It's got a specific gravity about 3.5 to 3.7, which is times the weight of water. You know, it's that's how much heavier it is, or, you know, density. And we believe that if the Earth's core is expanding, which it has done before catastrophically, if it does do that, it'll put pressure on that shell of water underneath the surface of the Earth, and it's only down there in some places, you know, 5 to 15 miles down. It will shoot it up like hypodermic needles up through the ocean floor. And already there are over 1,100 mapped smokers that are emitting 400-degree water that's salty and very hot up through what they call, you know, mini volcanoes in essence, but they're not really. They're just mini hot water vents in the North Pacific, and there's some over in the Indian Ocean as well. So if these rupture, it could very well be the same scenario that was reported in the tale of the flood of Noah, because it wasn't just the rain that made the flood. It was the rain was 40 days and nights. It was the rising of the waters from the fountains of the deep, they said, that broke up and put hot water up into the seas. And that water was pushed up from that lower level. What you don't see in the English versions of that story is the fact that it was hot. It wasn't rain that did all. It was the water coming up. And if we see this happen here, then the map you've got in front of you there shows where 200 feet of sea level increase would sink various parts of the United States and other countries too. I've got it for Europe as well. There you can see the whole world. Now, for the Hopi prophecy to become effective, for the water to run between their mesas, the southern portion of California and into Arizona will have to sink, subside. And that's not beyond imagination. If you look at all the quakes that are there in the last 14 months, you can see it there in that map. It's in those images. Are you still with me?
Oh, yeah, we're still here. One of the other elements that I wanted to explore a little bit deeper, because of the so-called Noah crisis with all the water and everything going out, I watched a presentation from, what's his name, Dr. He's an archaeologist, Jonathan Gray, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the Earth kind of got put on a slant by about 23 degrees or something like that, and something outside of the Earth's normal gravitational field had to have, in fact, knocked it off, and he theorized that it might have been a comet passing by very, very closely to the Earth or something along those lines, and when it tipped a crack, it basically crushed it in on itself, and a crack went all the way around the world and opened up all these underground aquifers and all of that kind of stuff. And approximately 70% of volcanic debris and things of that nature is water as well. So that's where all that kind of extra water came from, as far as he was concerned, from an archaeological standpoint. So not entirely dissimilar from what you're saying here. Now, going on to the Gulf oil cano, we had reports earlier on in the piece from Anatoly Sergeyevich, who was called in by BP, who's a world record holding free diver or something along those lines, but he went down in submarines to check the seafloor for cracks in the seafloor, and he found quite a few of them with oil gushing directly out of the seafloor, in some cases up to 20 miles away from the central wellhead. And then, of course, the news says, oh, we've closed the wellhead, and now virtually no news whatsoever comes out about the Gulf from now on. What's your take on that?
Well, I'd heard that they'd seen fissures emitting oil up to 50 miles from the wellhead as well. I have talked to people involved in the cleanup at ground level, actually, you know, out there with the shovels, and with people that were senior management involved in it, and certainly a lot of information has not made its way to the public. There's those fissures you're talking about. If they do hit a feed line going up into that that fault up the New Madrid area, they certainly could be effective in lubricating it. There's something else you were saying about the comet passing nearby causing that 23.5-degree tilt. The axis of the Earth is at 23.5, well, has been for a long time, 23.5-degree tilt from straight up and down. A number of planets have a little bit of a tilt. Venus is almost upside down, turning backwards. But in our case, it was either a disturbance of a nearby large mass and or the impact of a huge asteroid that hit the Gulf of Mexico. It's called the Chicxulub crater. It's underneath the Gulf of Mexico. In fact, the impact was so great that it shoved a lot of dirt and stuff all the way up into Texas, as far up as Austin, I think it was. You can find a lot of the debris from where whatever hit up there. Now, that could have also caused the tilt of the axis. In fact, I think Dr. Brown, I believe it was Dr. Brown in Australia years ago, did the calculations back to the time when the wobble would have been vertical and timed it to the time of the flood, I believe. So that may have caused it as well. A large impact like that could have knocked us off our axis. Whether it happens with the other planets that are not perfectly vertical, I don't know. It is interesting.
There's also talk of Planet X and Nibiru, and some people have been claiming that NASA has been tracking this object in space and all of that kind of stuff, and others are saying that it's just this big psyop to make people stand down to the New World Order. What's your take on that?
Well, now, I haven't seen Planet X, but recently I've been preparing a paper, a second part of a paper, that a large paper I'm doing on electricity, gravity, and magnetism discussed as movement in an ether or fluid space. I'm returning physics back to the time of James Clerk Maxwell in the 19th century, when he said that there's a fluid-like space in which all these mystical actions at a distance occur. And this problem is, you know, like Einstein said, although he had special and general relativity, he says, you know, I've always been plagued by the fact that light, which is obviously a waveform, comes from the sun or a star or whatever to Earth through something. And it can't just be through nothingness. And he says, and then I have the problem that light behaves like a particle. Now, I've solved that. I've answered those questions in this paper. I haven't published it yet because I'm waiting for some data from about 100 different testers all over the planet in 17 countries that are doing tests for me on the gravitational field variations. And what the theory is saying is several things. One, light is like a smoke ring traveling in the fluid of space, ether space. Smoke rings will behave like particles, but they have wave action or spin in them. That just take my word for it. Now we'll go into the proof on air. But the other thing is that I developed a formula from known positions of planets, their orbits, to describe where planets have to orbit. There are specific orbits where a planet may orbit stably around the sun. So I calculated these orbits and I found six empties, some in the inner planets and one out beyond gas giants, and then I went out to as far out as 250 times the distance of Earth. In fact, I went out 1,000 times the distance of Earth to get to the edge of the Oort cloud. Anyway, the distance of Earth from the sun. What I did find at 250 times the distance of Earth from the sun is a mean orbit, a circular mean orbit at 3,600 years period, plus or minus 12. Now, there's not a planet sitting there that we know about in that perfect orbit. It must be inclined, raised above kind of the equator, what they call the ecliptic plane, of the solar system. And I think it's at least 23 degrees, maybe 27 degrees, somewhere in that range, elevated above the plane of the spin of most of the planet's orbits. Now, its orbit is perfect in the progression that comes from the center of the sun with the formula I've got. When it's an era of 12 years, I mean, that's nothing in a 3,600-year orbit. So if it is indeed coming our way, and it has a 3,600-year period, we haven't seen it yet, but it is supposed to make a return, you know, sometime close to 2012, I don't know. We should be able to see it, at least in the southern hemisphere, very soon. My calculations show that its transit inside the inner planets from Earth, well, even from the asteroid belt down to Mercury, it's going to cut in probably around Mars, asteroid belt, somewhere in that area, dive up around the sun and swing back around into that same orbit and back out into space. It'll take about 11 years, if I've calculated its velocity correctly at this end of its orbit. Now, you know, Zacharias Hitchens said that from the glyphs and the language things he translated, that the ancient said that this was a planet called Nibiru. And it may be the same thing, I don't know. It certainly has the same timing according to the Mayan calendar. If this is the planet he was talking about, he said in the old records that beings lived on it, humanoids, and they jumped off over onto Earth while they were near the sun, visited with us, did things, jumped back on their planet, went back out into space after it moved further on out. Now, I had trouble believing this because, you know, a planet like that way out beyond even Pluto is going to be so cold that nothing could grow. Everything would be iced over. I couldn't see how they could live on the planet. Well, I had to change my mind when I started analyzing this new theory of gravitation, because I went further than just plotting where the orbits of planets were. I plotted gravity in a new way, showing an invisible spiral vortex field around every planet, every moon, every star, every galaxy even, that organizes the atoms into the patterns that they form so that their mass is concentrated. That's the gravity most people know about. But there's a second weaker force which swirls them around like water swirls sand around in a glass and organizes them into a little ball in the middle of this organizing field. And you can see it if you look at galaxies. You can see the spiral arms at a certain age of a galaxy and it becomes perfectly round with orbits and, you know, splash rings around it. It is there right in front of you. It's a fluid mechanism. Well, when I used this concept and expanded it in 3D animation programs here, things which I will put in the new paper I'm writing, I saw that it allows for these rings to fold over the surface of a star, a planet, or moon, and form the surface, but enter at the poles and spin inside and form shells. Now, that means we can have not exactly a hollow Earth, but a void, a shell, empty shell, between the inside of the surface of the Earth and the surface of the core of the planet. So when I saw that, then I went further and I discovered that this is a periodic thing, that periodically the holes open and close on a planet or a galaxy, or I guess on a sun as well. Now, if that happens on Earth, I thought, well, what will happen if we're at one of those stages where the poles are going to open? Well, if it's warm inside, there will be heating at the poles. And sure enough, the Arctic ice is melting, not really explained properly, don't know why. South Pole at Vostok there, the Russians have found a lake that is only 27 degrees Fahrenheit, which is just 5 degrees below freezing, and it should be solid down there, but it's warm enough that it's liquid, almost liquid. So, in fact, it may be. They stopped the drilling here last year and started again this year. But having put all this together in my mind, I thought, well, if you can have polar openings in a planet and you can get inside the planet, and it's warm inside there because of that hot core, then you could live on the upside, you know, upside down on the surface of the Earth inside and have a low-grade kind of artificial sun from the heat of the core of the planet. Then I realized that if Nibiru had beings on it that lived inside the planet, then it was warm inside, that they could have virtually a planet spaceship that takes them back on out, you know, to their orbit out there for 1,800 years and turns around, heads back, you know, for 1,800 years and then does a little 11, 12-year orbit around the sun and goes back out again. They could do that. And they may have the technology to open and close holes in the surface of their planet so they can get off, you know, the planet and back onto it and come inside when it gets cold out. So I'm now reversed position where I used to kind of laugh or poo-poo the idea of Planet X and laugh or poo-poo the fact that there could be beings living on it that, you know, with an orbit that extreme and that far out. Now I'm having to rethink all that. And I think a lot of this will be explained when I release my paper. But the adjunct to this is that I've been doing tests with a battery and some wire, a little laser pointer to show twist in a wire with the car battery hooked up to it just briefly to interact with the gravitational field of the Earth. Back in 2008, I did this test myself here and with some friends in Queensland and one of my sons down in Perth, Australia. The results I got here, the wire movements were one way. Down there, they were the opposite. Now, 2011, I had them run the test again. And in fact, I'm having 100 other people run the test as well. And the initial results we're getting in at the moment are, since 2008, the torque on that wire, which is the electricity interacting with the atoms lined up in our gravitational field, the torque has reversed. down the southern hemisphere, it's flip-flopped. And the same here. Now, what causes this? I don't know if it's the beginning of a magnetic pole shift or even a gravitational pole shift, you know, spin axis pole shift. Something is up. And certainly, if you look at our news at standeo.com, you'll see that Holly's got a story up there today about Earth's core is rotating much slower than previously thought. Now, this may be a function of it slowing down and flipping and then speeding up again. So there are things happening that tell us that NASA's looking for a mystery planet. They think they found it four times the size of Jupiter, maybe 10 times out, way out, you know, and it's been exciting other asteroids and comets, and that's why we're getting more of them now. But that may be their way of kind of gently telling us, well, maybe there's something a lot closer than that. They plan to make an announcement this year on just that. So when you put all these facts together, you know, it's about the only thing you can do is prepare yourself with your location and with emergency supplies, food, water, power, whatever you need. Holly covers all that in the book, the Dare to Prepare book, and we've got people using that book in Canada and Australia, New Zealand, Europe, because it's a very practical guide for you to think about what things you need, you know, where you are. And other than that, we suggest a real close relationship with God, because a lot of us are going to meet him probably sooner than we thought if this happens. And you can already see strange things happening in the weather, the birds, the fish. There's something up.
Yeah.
You know, Stan, I mean, you brought up Zachariah Sitchin, and when I see his website and look at his works and stuff, I mean, to me, he's basically a mason in disguise or something, you know. Like, it's really apparent to me anyway that the guy is pushing the occult heavily, and this interventionist theory is there, I believe, is going to be their solution to the Hegelian dialectic that they've set up, the dichotomy they've set up between Darwinist evolutionists and Christians.
Well, creationists, you know, are intelligent designists, right?
Yeah, and they want this third way once their Darwinist theory falls completely over. I mean, it's already fallen over in the mind of anyone who can think, but once it falls over completely, they want, oh, well, it's just the aliens implanted us here, and they're from Sirius and Pleiades, and that's why us Masons run the place.
Well, and that was the other thing. What was it? The alien invasion story with Project Bluebeam, and the UN has now appointed their alien ambassador and this kind of stuff. So simultaneously, what we've got going on here, Stan, if I may, I mean, we've got these huge Earth events that are happening all over the place, a lot of chatter about that, and then, of course, on the other side of the fence, we have a massive sort of alien agenda type dialogue going on here.
We do, and I agree. I think that dialogue is increasing. The number of sightings in the first 45 days of this year of UFOs has been more than any other time in recorded history. You know, our whole consciousness is being shifted over to look for the alien announcement that we know they're here, and we know they've been here, and so why won't they tell us? And so it's pushing for disclosure, official disclosure. So, Yes, Will, I think that we're probably looking at an attempt to use their alien presence, whether real or manufactured, to save Earth people and bring them into that one world controlled government. And even the book of Daniel in the Old Testament warns of this, that it's going to be an off-worlder, a fallen one posing as a god, little g, and trying to trick everybody and to form a global dictatorship with his man here on the earth. And that's just recently. I just recently translated only 8 verses out of Daniel that told us that. It was heavily kind of disguised in the way the colloquial Hebrew was written at the time. But I've put that as a special kind of appendix, you know, at the end of Cosmic Conspiracy, the final edition of it. I'm not going to do anymore, but I figured that you had to know everything else I'd said in the Cosmic before you'd understand the importance of this thing in Daniel about look out for the alien god that comes, or the alien comes posing as a god. It says he'll pretend to be. And if you're here on the planet when that happens, and he says, or his agents say, oh, he's over in his spaceship out in the desert, or he's in his hideout in the desert, or in this bunker, or in orbit, or whatever. Don't believe it, because he says there's one greater coming. Now, Daniel says it's going to be the real Messiah, the real creator, will arrive, But after that, shortly thereafter, and not to be fooled by this cat that wants everybody numbered with that, you know, 666 number on their hand or their forehead, and or they can't buy or sell, and, you know, it'll be very obvious.
Well, so carrying on from that, because more recently what we're having is also a huge economic crisis. The US dollar has been dumped essentially by the Chinese and the Russians, and another person, I forget what his name is, endofamerica4.com, if you go there you can watch the video on it, saying that the US dollar is going to be dumped as the world's reserve currency, and that's kind of going to destroy the US. And as a result, obviously, coupled with this huge amount of upsets and turmoil in the Middle East, we're going to have a global food crisis, petrol crisis, and economic crisis. And of course, the solution is going to be proposed by the World Bank and IMF, that we need one global currency called the Bancor, which everybody's current currencies will be denominated in. You know, we'll have New Zealand dollars that are you know, basically given their value by international banksters who have absolutely no interest in retaining any type of economic prosperity in the world. And that will be essentially the source of the global governance, is to control global issuance of currency and its value.
Well, that's certainly a major part of it, but you left out the threat of nuclear war in the Middle East, and with the Islamic nations toppling, you know, left, right, and center, and coming under a kind of a radical portion of Islam. I think we're going to see the leader of Iran, if it's still Ahmadinejad, I don't know, but somebody over there is going to put an Arab-Islamic confederation together and say, we want Israel dead, and America's in the way, so we want them dead too. In addition to collapsing the dollar, they're going to try to collapse the country from within. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I take conjecture from that, because the Muslim Brotherhood was set up by the CIA, as far as I know, to recruit people like Osama bin Laden for the Mujahideen to go fight against the Soviets. It seems that all these dictators that are being overthrown in the Middle East are all CIA-backed dictators. So I think that they're setting them up for a big fall so that they can put in a new, even worse type of government to promote instability in the Middle East.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, but because I was recruited by the white-haired Illuminists that everybody talks about, the Illuminati, over in Melbourne in 71, I got to sit in on conversations that I had the thing kind of explained to me in pieces. And basically, we never stop fighting the Crusades. The Western Christian nations have been against the Muslim nations since the 12th Crusade, the last Crusade anyway, and or the ninth, I think it was, the ninth official crusade. And they've been fighting it since then. And the Western banking powers wanted to burn the Middle East oil, because that's the only power they had over there, was their oil, after oil was discovered as a major source of energy for the planet. So burning up the oil, whether you caught the oil fields on fire in a war or whether you burned in your cars or whatever, it was an attempt to deplete their economic strength, so they couldn't even have weapons to fight us in the future. And so the Crusades are still going on. Now, the Arab nations that were being hit this way, mainly OPEC nations, found out about it in the 80s, and because they didn't want to lose their buying power, they invested money into the World Bank, which the United States says, look, here's a way to put your money into something safe, go into the World Bank, bank other economies in this South America, stuff like that. So a lot of the cash that they were getting in the Arab nations went over into the World Bank, which went into the third world countries, which, surprise, surprise, somebody destabilized, and the governments were overthrown by military factions, and they never paid the money back to the World Bank, and so the Arabs lost their money to regimes that wouldn't pay it back. So then they thought, right, well, this is not going to work. We see what you're doing. So we'll put our money into U.S. corporations, European corporations, and so they divested and have been putting money into these corporations. Now, how that's going to play out, I don't know what the counter for that is. But this has all been, believe it or not, a continuation of the Crusades. And, I couldn't believe when I first heard it. But if the CIA is involved in the setting up the Muslim Brotherhood and all that kind of stuff, it's going to end badly, because America is coming down.
I find that really confusing, because a lot of the mainstream portrayal after 9/11 the U.S. administration's war, and George Bush is the figurehead of sort of evangelical, the Christian right, supposedly, and then this being the new Crusades, was a populist idea. But then, like you say, the Crusades may not have ended. But And to me, it was completely false because I know George Bush's skull and bones and all the rest of it. He's not Christian. That's easy to say. It's easy to sit in church once a week. It's not so easy to get into skull and bones. So, I mean, to me, it didn't make any sense. To me, it was, well, they're more with the occult, and if anything, they'd side with Islam more than Christianity.
Well, couldn't agree with you more. When they say the Crusades, everybody thinks it's a good Christian guy's doing it. It wasn't. Crusades were never about that. They were about money and power. And, you know, look at the Templars, the Knights Templar. You know, how they went over and dug in Jerusalem, and we think they found the gold at Sodom and it hidden there. It financed a lot of stuff. I mean, the Knights Templar are still a force today.
And they got in with the Eastern forces also, right? I mean, the assassins.
Yeah. I mean, nothing is as it seems. But the major thing is the confrontation of these two ideologies at the moment. This may change, but it's been going on since the 13th century. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Well, the order out of chaos paradigm is what strikes me when I look at that Middle East situation and think, who's going to come in and try and pose themselves as the savior and come in with a even worse government than before this time?
Repeat that.
I was just wondering, you know, with the order out of chaos paradigm that we kind of think of, this huge amount of unrest in the Middle East, that seems to be the pretext to bring in even worse and even more tyrannical governments. So, like, for example, what's happened in Tunisia, and in fact, I saw a video earlier this morning, our Tunisian listener Ahmed sent me, the castle where the former Tunisian president was living. And he had stacks of cash, from floor to ceiling, huge quantities, wads of cash. And I was just thinking, wow, what a rich-ass man. And what I was wondering was, who's going to pose as the savior for the Middle East out of all of this, you know? What kind of solutions are they going to propose? Because it seems highly suspicious to me that all of these places, all these US-backed dictators would be overthrown simultaneously. And I always wonder, who's going to come in to fill the vacuum here?
Well, you know, even Nostradamus said that there will be the one who wears the blue fez of the blue turban in ancient Persia, which is Iran, who will unite an Arab confederation in the last days, and he will be a mighty military leader. The Islamic world is looking for a Mahdi, a messiah of their own description, a Mahdi to arrive, and Ahmadinejad reckons he's going to be the guy that lays the groundwork for fulfilling the Islamic prophecies to allow the Imam Mahdi to arrive and to take charge of the planet. Now, we're still butting heads with the Judeo-Christian thing, which supports Jesus as their Messiah and a return. You're going to have to choose one side or the other, no matter who you are, Muslim or Christian or Jew. This moment is coming. Now, according to prophecies in Islam, they do say to look out for what's they call it, Dajjal, the bad Mahdi, the imposter, and I'm hoping that they will see that the first one that comes claiming to be is that imposter one. The Christian and Judeo prophecies they do say the same thing. The first one to arrive and have all these powers and signs and wonders will be a liar, a deceiver, and a bad guy. But he will come with peaceful contracts and negotiations, and he will take the planet by peace. He will offer solutions to all the world problems that you and I have just talked about, and more.
Sounds like Peter our Joseph. Lord and Savior, Barak H. O'Barry.
I was going to say Peter Joseph for a minute. Offer solutions and peaceful. Silver tone.
Well, we live as the Chinese say, in exciting times, and it's certainly more of a curse than a blessing. But we're going to see some real changes in the human condition here the next few years.
Hey, well, at least we're not getting bored, right, Stan?
Oh, no, definitely not that. You know, you've got to wonder how they're going to cause the attacks in the United States, and the Hopi have given me some inclination in that. It's saying that their prophecies say that there will be civil wars, not war, but wars inside the United States between various ethnic and financial and religious factions, like civil wars between the extreme right, extreme left, black against white or brown, Muslims against Christians, that the United States is going to come unglued, and that there will be survivors out of this internal civil war. But they'll have another problem, and that is that in the weakened state, that the United States will be invaded by Russia and China, and some other Middle East countries will assist them in part. And it will destroy so much of America that there will only be a portion of it left habitable. And the Hopi and the Navajo will be going up into the four corners of, Colorado, Arizona, and that area where we are now. In fact, there's a lot of religious faiths, some not Christian or Judeo. They're New Age, I guess you'd call them, which have moved here many years ago for that same reason. They were told that this is going to be kind of the last surviving part of the United States as we know it today. The George Washington dream vision that he had, allegedly, that was written down, put on the internet, does end up with the angel standing up to defend the remnant of the United States in the Colorado region. So, you know, I can see the civil unrest forming. I mean, people are already starting to complain about not getting enough money. They're hungry. They can't feed their kids. They can't get a job. The U.S. dollar is losing its value. And when it loses a certain point, people won't be able to afford to feed their families. The rest of the world, the third world countries, 80 to 90% of their income goes for food. Here, we don't have that problem yet, but it's coming.
And that's what worries me.
Well, it's actually just arrived. In fact, George Heminger, or George for title on YouTube, almost got arrested the other day for filming empty supermarket shelves.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we know it's coming. And the United States imports so much of its food and other products now that when the dollar does do that dive, and it's perilously close to that now, between now and the end of the year, we're going to see, food lines that are empty. I mean, shops that are empty. People just will not be able to afford it. And even Walmart's complaining here. Super grocery store Walmart, they're not doing well either. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, it was Albertsons in Southern California that he was in. And just, the fact that you nearly get arrested for filming the supermarket shelves, I mean, come on.
Well, that's creating panic, you see. And the whole object has been to have a controlled populace here, but we're losing control at a governmental level. I've been in favor of kind of letting things leak out unofficially to get people that are going to prepare. But there comes a point where that's not going to cut it anymore. Everybody will suddenly become aware because their pocketbook is empty. And then they're going to have increased crime, people stealing, people shooting each other, little gangs and tribes forming that are armed to the teeth here in the United States anyway. So, there's no safe place on this planet for you to spend the rest of your life. You're just going to have to deal with the dangers where you are.
Well,
speaking of
domestic unrest in the United States, you in fact have been talking about foreign troop buildup in the United States. I mean, how many foreign troops are there now?
I don't know, and I certainly get reports that I can't verify with people saying, oh, we saw, blue United Nations uniforms, or we saw German troops, or we saw Russians. I do know that, 12, 15 years ago, that the Russian leading generals were allowed to – they were taken on a tour of the western coast of the United States for the police, showing them all their alert systems and defense systems they had. Civil emergency system, so that the Russian general staff knew at that time just exactly what we had. I thought that was crazy, but there's been a lot more, I'm sure, after that. And I'm sure the Chinese have been able to get their subs close. It's already been reported in paper, close enough to the United States shoreline that they could darn near walk inland. And they got past the SOSUS and all the other naval detection gear to the surprise of everyone. And I don't think that was an airplane taking off of the West Coast, a few months back here. They said, oh, that was an airplane. It wasn't a missile that was launched. I think that was probably a Chinese missile from a submarine that just said, see, I can do it. That's while Obama was overseas anyway. So
what gets me is even with our elections coming up here in November in New Zealand, and all these problems starting to surface, that our buying power of our dollar just completely going through the floor. Everything's going up as a result, of course. It's not the price of goods going up, it's the value of a dollar going down.
Right.
On a relative scale. But people don't understand basic economics. And so we have these political candidates just like, we need to increase tax and grow the government, because, you know, the less the government takes, the less it can give to people. And you know what I mean? And they've just got this backward understanding to how we grow a society and how we empower a society. And, you know, all of us know how we could solve these problems in a heartbeat. We could start minting our own currency. It's simple, simple. We could cut out this fiat currency, cut out the foreign debt, and we could start trying to grow a real economy from the bottom up once again. There'll be difficulties, of course. There'd be unrest, of course, but nothing like the unrest that's coming.
Oh, Will, that's an unpopular idea, Will.
And these people are just pragmatic to a T, like you say. If they have, you know, if they're short of food, they're going to steal for food. I mean, they're going to go out and cause problems. Rather than think one or two or three or four steps ahead, most people are completely reactionary. You poke them with a pin and they punch you back. They're stupid. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's easy for us to sit down there and say this now, but we can't turn it around because the globalists have got us all by the short and curlies. And no matter what move we make, they've got a counter for it. Yeah. The snowball has rolled downhill and it's gained enough momentum to just crush us.
Pretty much, yep.
Yeah.
Well, see, and we're entering into times of great uncertainty, and what really bugs me is the people who still remain so certain of their false belief structures, you know? Oh, I believe in the false left-right paradigm. Oh, I believe in the health system that's the third leading cause of death. Oh, I believe in the oil industry, which is totally corrupt and has no... You know, it's just mind-boggling. Now, if we have, right, a global disaster coming, and in my opinion, if it's not going to happen in a terms of a massive earthquakes or natural processes and things of that nature, there is certainly a mega depression planned by the globalist to force everybody into receivership, basically, and total slavery. And so my question is, really, how many people are expected to actually survive this? And more to the point, who is going to be targeted? Are people going to be targeted specifically as individuals, like people who are trying to get the truth out or things of that nature, do you think?
Well, I don't think – I mean, if I were in their shoes, I wouldn't target people trying to get the news out so much, because you make them martyrs and just draw more attention to it, especially with the Internet. Unless you could shut down Internet and all communications, that would be unwise, which they might do. I mean, they might shut it down to stop that. But back in, 1974, 75, I had the privilege of bumping into a CIA courier coming out of Asia, and no need in saying the name or whatever, but he's one of these kind of guys that has a handcuffed briefcase to his hand, and he had to lay over for a night at a friend's house and before he caught his next flight back to Virginia. And he had documents on him there that he had to deliver on a study they had done in Asia to show how many people would die if the U.S. withheld grain loans at a certain time, and they thought that would be really great to help control population of these useless eaters, as they were thinking about them, to kill 100 million people by withholding grain loans. Well, I do believe you ought to show people how to grow the grain and give them the resources to do it themselves rather than just keep giving them food, you know. But you can see that they were talking then, I saw the document, about letting 100 million people die of starvation simply by withholding grain loans at the right time. So they were already looking at mass control then. So for them to be looking at wiping out portions of the planet now then for their own use is to reduce the drain on the resources of the planet is not a stretch of the imagination. In fact, I'm sure that they've looked at that and considered it. When the Gandhis tried to put birth control into India, the darn Indians killed them. You know, they assassinated them because they didn't want to change their religious beliefs. They want to keep breeding and couldn't figure out that that was what was killing them. So they're going to do it to themselves whether we do it or not. The other thing about this tyrannical government you're talking about, they took over the United States some time ago, and when Roosevelt put the Great Seal of the United States on the $1 bill, it kind of just sealed the deal as far as I was concerned. They were saying outright, we're here, we've got control of the U.S. economy. Because on that back of the seal, where it says in Latin, novus ordo seclorum, nunc quæptus novus ordo seclorum, when you translate that, the seclorum is a real anomaly in Latin. It's not slang for anything. It's not a real word. And they've often tried to say it's announcing, Hanuatquepta's announcing the birth or arrival of a novus ordo seculum, a new world or secular world order. But it's not that. It's two words. That seculum is run together, but it's, if you break it apart into sec and lorum, it's a world order which favors the whip or the lash. Okay? It's there on the thing. You look it up. S-E-C-L-O-R-U-M, sec and lorum. That's a coded document, a coded seal. And they grabbed us by the short and curlies back in that time when they took over the Fed here.
And also the pyramid on that seal with the 72 stones in it, 72 powers of God and the Kabbalah. It also is, it makes a 23.5 degree angle with the right angle, both sides of that isosceles triangle that formed the pyramid, which is the axis of the angle of the axis of the earth.
There were a lot of things that you can see in that. I took the photos of the front and the back. In the old days, we didn't have computer Photoshop to do it with, but you can take photos of the front and back of that seal and overlay them and then spin them. An old Masonic trick with some of their little coated coins is that you would take the coin and you would spin it in a table, and both sides would spin in front of your eyes, and you'd see a total message appear, but if you looked at either side, you wouldn't see it. And in this case, you can turn the eagle's head and its wings to various angles and point out messages on the thing if you can see through the seal. I've done a couple of them in the new edition of the Cosmic Conspiracy in the back of it so that people could see. And thank goodness for Photoshop, because it allowed you to see a lot better than I ever could before, you know, that I could show to people anyway, except at a lecture. But this wasn't the U.S. seal, really. This was the New World Order seal. And, you know, it's happening so fast, it's making my head spin. I've been talking about it coming for three, 4 decades, probably even 5 now, I guess. And to see it happen in just such a short time here in this administration, my head is just still spinning.
Well, that's the idea of shock and awe tactics, isn't it, Stan? You know, just catch everybody unawares and just blow their minds.
Well, I'm supposed to be aware. I'm out there talking about it. I'm feeling pretty embarrassed that I'm feeling this way because, you know, I thought we'd have a little more time to react to these things and get people ready. But it's just, it's suddenly upon us. It is shock and awe.
Well, you know, and I suppose this is the idea behind warfare being carried out on the entirety of the world's population. It's like, if you want to motivate any large section of society to do anything, you need big events to scare the living daylights out of them so that they'll all be collectively motivated in a singular direction.
You know, I think that this is happening. I've seen, I'm sure you have too, a number of things like pandemics, threats of, you know, global, you know, biological warfare or biological mistakes that get out to kill hundreds of millions of people, and they're reported to be worse than they are. And the earthquake situation and the Planet X situation, all these may be reported to be worse than they really are at this point, or ahead of time so far that they can get control of the planet. If you control the media, which they do, then a lot of these disasters can be accelerated to beyond what their immediate threat is to get people scared enough to accept this new world order.
And that's one of the things that really bugs me about the media is that, I mean, like the Christchurch quake, for example. After watching the live broadcast with the same footage being repeated, the same headlines being repeated, and the same tedious interviews with people on the street, that kind of thing, and pathetic questioning like, were you shocked when the earthquake hit? You know?
No, I was expecting it. Yeah, I was ready. Yeah, right.
It was like, no, bro. I was held up in my bunker with my 10 years supply of food and water. You know, this was no surprise to me. You know, well, I mean, come on. What kind of obvious, ridiculous, pathetic slime bag swizzle stick reporter really thinks that these are good questions? You know, it just blows my mind how bloody pathetic they are.
The media are so soft these days. I mean soft in the most limp-wristed sense of the word. Like, they've got everyone so normalized, cotton-walled society to such an extent that, you know, a week ago in the local paper here where I live, The main story in both the local newspapers was how some guy went and killed a couple of chickens at the local sports park. You know? And it was like two dead chickens. I felt like writing a letter to the editor. One of the people writing this is in fact a local government member, newly elected in our local super city here. And I felt like writing a letter to her saying, or in the newspaper saying, how many chickens have you eaten this week? And what sort of living conditions and what sort of conditions did they die under?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just so pathetic. Like, if someone kills a couple of chickens, it's whoa, whoa, whoa. But if we all go to the supermarket and eat just mass poisoning, mass kill ourselves off over 30 years, just total garbage, if we legislate the murder of over a million Arab individuals because we think they flew a couple of planes into our buildings, I mean, if we legislate murder, ignore just women and children being sold and big child sex rings, and it's okay. But the minute someone goes out and kills a chicken, it's like, whoa, 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 we've got to pretend we're good here and we pretend we're humanitarian and pretend we're caring individuals. It's like all of a sudden everyone cares about this earthquake. And I mean, I don't want to be too cynical. And I feel sorry for the families of the individuals that have been lost. But for the whole country to all of a sudden be like hands across New Zealand and we're all humanitarians, but we don't care. We didn't care about the Gulf oil spill. We didn't care about 9/11. We don't care about Oklahoma City. We don't care about, you know, the mass genocide that's going on with vaccines and Gardasil being given to our young girls here. See the hypocrisy?
Oh, definitely. It's there. I mean, this is an extension of what we used to complain about years ago when the news had come on, the evening news, and somebody would, let's say, just lost an arm in a car accident, and they're sitting there with it all taped up, you know, the stump, and they're in pain, and the journalist says, you just had an accident. How do you feel? You know? Well, gee, I hurt. You know? God, what kind of questions are these? And, of course, they're now taking a dedicated direction, you know, like you're saying, where they're just mamby-pambies. I mean, we've got a bunch of, well.
Yeah, I mean, if I start to make a media campaign or whatever the kind of thing, my reporters are going to have an automatic clout machine, you know, on their shoulders or something, so that if they ask a stupid question, they get smacked over the back of the head.
I mean, Vinny, our dabblings with media, I mean, how many times, I guess particularly myself and my style, how many times are they just like shocked and like, call security or something?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just by asking a logical question.
It's like that CSI Navy where that guy thumps the other, his young lieutenant or something on the back of the head every time he says something stupid, you know, it's a bang, you know, the thumper machine.
Yeah.
I forget what it is.
And that should be a requirement, okay? You have your microphone, you have your camera, and you have your clout machine. Whoosh. Just to keep you on point, you know.
Hey, you know, I just got a news thing here. Holly just put it in front of me here. Did you know that about 107 pilot whales died over on your Southwest South Island coast?
Yeah,
they all beat themselves.
That was posted up on the Vinnie Eastwood Show Facebook group by our fabulous producer Mitch. In fact, Mitch, are you there with us?
He's probably.
I'm here. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you tell us about the story?
Yeah, bear with me 1 second because I'm going to switch. Yeah, I was just staying quietly in the background.
Yeah, well, I wonder, did this beaching occur just before the earthquakes or what?
Oh, you're talking on the whales.
Yeah.
Basically, my understanding is the beaching of the whales happened before the earthquake, and it was within 2 weeks of the earthquake. So, and they wrote about it. And they were trying to determine if the two events were related. So,
okay.
I would say the two events are related, but you see, we also have a bigger thing that's going on right now. And the bigger issue, as we all know, is how the BP oil spill and the oil cano has affected the oceans and the Gulf Stream and all these things. And you know, so it could be a number of things. Plus, I know, Stan, you have the other issue. We haven't really talked about it. If I can interject this, Vinny, please tell our audience what is going on with your invitation to bring people on board to create a device regarding the polar shift.
I guess I didn't explain that in detail. I did, I guess, gloss over it a bit, but this experiment that I'm doing that I did in 2008 with just family members and friends, I needed to get data from all over the planet so that I could see if the effects of this test we're doing with the wire and the battery and everything will let us know if the gravitational field of the Earth is changing. The best way to say it, I guess, is that I think that NASA's discovered that there's a weak gravitational force in our solar system they didn't know about. I think it was the Pioneer 10 and 11 probes that were out near about 75 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun, at 75 AUs, let's call it, that's what an astronomical unit is. And they found that the satellites, instead of continuing to leave the solar system, are getting a gentle tug back, pulling them back toward the Sun, and they couldn't figure out where this gravity force is coming from. Now, I think I have found that force. It's a weak gravitational force, which is what I call the containment of field, the spinning invisible vortex of the ether space around atoms that organizes them into the center of the spinning like a vortex would. In fact, it's like a glass of water and you put sand and iron filings in and stir it up. You'll see that there's a vortex going down to the center and the bottom of the glass, and it'll organize first in the center the heavy iron and then on the top of that the sand. And as the spinning water in the glass slows down, you'll see the tip of that vortex rising up and down, up and down. It's going back and forth. And extrapolating that to a planet with two glasses, bottom to bottom doing this, what happens, I think, is we see this periodic movement inside the planet where there's a polar hole opening and then closing, opening and closing, just like that up and down movement of that vortex in a glass of water. So the tests we've been doing are showing variations that are surprising. In New Zealand and in South Africa, we've already been getting reports from some very good reports from a guy there, from Leonard in North Island, New Zealand. He and Karen have been doing a lot of work, a very conscientious, very detailed reporting of it. And we've noticed some strange things that we can't explain at the moment. But the results I'm getting from the rest of the planet from the testers is still coming in. We've still only got probably 10% of them have reported because it takes a while to set up all the gear for them. But the reports are showing variations in regions rather than just the north and south hemisphere. And so we're trying to iron out any other stray influences like telluric currents, earth currents, and stuff like that, and ionospheric storms and blasts from the sun, that kind of stuff, which screws up the results. But what we're seeing is something is apparently causing our atoms to flip upside down. Since 2008, every atom on the planet on the surface seems to have flipped upside down if our test results are being interpreted correctly. So, Mitch, that's basically, I guess, did I explain it enough for you there?
It did. Basically, so what you're saying to our audience is this has already started. This isn't something we're waiting for, is it, Stan?
That's true. That's true.
I mean, this isn't like someone standing around going, oh, in 2014, there's going to be a polar shift. It sounds from your advice and research and team, this has already started.
Yeah, NASA's came out not entirely long ago from Natural News saying that airports in Florida have had to repaint the numbers on their airfields because the sensitive aerial navigation instruments in their planes have been guiding them off course, and they had to actually reset the ways that they're landing now because of the moving magnetic. Yeah.
Vinny, let me butt in here because I said the same thing. I brought that up in a couple of shows last week, and I got a letter, a very nice letter from a pilot, commercial pilot. And he said, look, I know you think this is unusual. It's unusual because the local press picked it up in Florida. He said, but every 7 years, a lot of airports have to, especially above the 60th latitude, have to change their magnetic field pointers on the runways because the North Pole does move. But now, what he didn't address with that was how fast the North Pole is moving now. It's moving 10 times faster than the South Pole, and, like 40, 50 kilometers a year. It's moving. And a guy from up in Alaska sent me a photo of the North Pole in his corner of his room. He hung it up, 30 years ago he took a picture of it in his living room, and today he took one, and it had moved. The compass had moved along his wall about 6 feet. you know, the North Pole, from where he was in Canada, was 6 feet along his wall from where it used to be. So that has me concerned.
Well, that brings a good example, doesn't it, Stan? I mean, that shows a good example that can apply to lots of information and perceptions and realities in this whole conspiracy versus mainstream world, where sometimes people pick up bits of information and they say, well, look, they've had to recalibrate their navigation equipment. This is unheard of, yada, yada, yada. Then someone could counter it, so-called debunker could counter it and say, oh, no, they do this every 6 years or every 7 years above the 60th latitude. It's totally explained, conspiracy debunked. Go back to eating moon rocks.
And then
it shows a third level where, wait a minute, it's actually changing at a faster rate than normal. And you see this a lot of in so many different examples, so many different practical examples in this whole dichotomy, whereby there's a simple conspiratorial explanation that's easily debunked, but then there's still a further, more complex rationale for the conspiracy that goes beyond both arguments.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at. I know something is wrong. We're getting reports from in Singapore, for all places. I mean, and in Thailand, gardeners, right? And they're writing in saying, you know, the shadows on my wall for this time of year are in the wrong place. Now, what is causing that? You know, their plants are the same, the wall is the same, and yet I can't get any positive confirmation of a tilt of the axis from any astronomer anywhere. I've tried private ones and clubs, and everybody said, look, I won't even use your name. Just tell me what you see. You know, is there any difference in the attitude of the planet toward, you know, to the stars around us or anything, or to the sun? And I can't get confirmation of it. So, I don't know what's causing all these other aberrations. What would cause the shadows that normally appear on the wall at a certain place not to appear this time of year in the right place, unless our attitude to the sunlight has changed?
Could something like HAARP be bending the instant angle of light? Or, I mean, have they got any technology that could do that?
Well, it could
change the density of the medium that light's passing through. And
well, they have theorized that you could take a strong enough electric field, a direct current polarization field, and actually form a lens effect in air to make an air lens. Mm. So, you know, I suppose it's possible, but I don't know if all the cloud or the chemtrails are part of this or what. I was showing people on the site on our show images, which is right below the Vinnie Eastwood show. It's in the Kevin Smith show line. It says show images. That's what we were talking about a while ago at the early part of the show. If you look at that, you will see a picture of the North Pole of Mars with spirals around it. You will see a long-distance swirl pattern from Mars, and then Tethys 2, it's a moon of Saturn, which has the polar pattern, that circular pattern, and then you see Saturn's North Pole has that circular pattern like a spinning, you know, glass of water. All these things are real, and many of the planets, Venus has that as well, have this spiral pattern at the poles, north and south. And if you'll see the illustration I've drawn there, if you blow it up, you'll see that the containment field lines make a spiral entry into the north and south poles of planets. It's there in the illustrations from the paper I'm doing. So these things, to me, indicate something is happening. Now, in this set of images I've got there, I have about right above the earthquake line or the earthquake photos there, I have Neil Adams' links to his site, to his animations of the Earth and Mars and some moons expanding. He takes real photos, NASA photos, of the Earth and these various moons and Mars, and he shrinks the diameter of the planet down to where all of the surface features meet together. And it proves right before your very eyes, whatever the cause of it was, it proves that planets expand as they get older. And they do it suddenly. It's not gradual. It's a catastrophic event when it happens. It's just, it reaches a certain phase and boom, up it goes. And this may be what we're seeing here with all this magnetic field and the axis change and the inversion of the atoms of the planet. I mean, something is unusual. So since we can't get it from the officialdom, what I've done is made a planet-wide classroom and experiment. And in fact, we even have one classroom doing the experiment here in Pennsylvania at school, because we want to try to have the common person that can do these simple tests help us get the data in, because we can't get it from the government.
Highly suspicious there. But, you know, it's not exactly out of step for the government to deny giving people information that they really need in order to make any decent decision, though, is it?
No, it's not. But if we put ourselves in charge of it, if you and I were in charge of the world, let's say, and we knew this stuff was coming, at that point you have to look at an ELE, a life extinguishing event, and you have to say, well, do we let the human race die, or do we preserve a core of it? If we're going to preserve a core of survivors, do we tell the people beforehand, the whole planet, that, look, we're just going to have a lottery, and we're going to get a couple million of you, and we're going to put you, you know, in a safe place, you know, like that 2012 movie. I mean, that doesn't work, because people riot and want to be, you know, part of the ones that get on the ship, the safety, or, you know, the underground bases or whatever they're going to use. And we couldn't do that because it would disrupt what we need to put the core survivors together and where we're going to put them, how we're going to select them. So you too and I would probably say, well, look, rather than destroy everyone, we better save a remnant. It's the old lifeboat is too full syndrome. We can't take any more with us. The rest of you are going to have to drown. And so I've argued with myself trying to play devil's advocate, and doggone it, I think I would leak information out like it's being done now through unofficial sources. And you know, I could probably be an unofficial source. They've just let do it because I discovered it, because I certainly haven't had any help from anybody tell me the skinny inside the government and what's being held back. But I can see, I have a brain, I can think, and so can you guys. And when we talk on the radio and on our websites about these things and bring up the issues with as much kind of either rumor or fact we can put together, we are, in essence, doing what we would want people to do if we were in charge, and that is tell that segment of the population of the world that will do something to prepare themselves and try to endure on their own to do it, to get together and do it. And the rest of them that aren't going to be doing anything, just going to keep watching TV or whatever it is they do, they're expendable.
You know, that's the thing, Stan, that really bothers me right now, is that even within the truth movement or in the alternative press, there has been so much infighting, and it's really bothered a lot of the guests that come on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on a weekly basis. And I don't know if this infighting is happening because of trolls. I don't know if it's that people are getting too close to the truth. You know, I don't really know.
Well, I've seen it in just normal people, whether it be the truth movement or not. In the last 6 months, I've both seen people getting more irritable in the stores and just short-tempered. And this tends to make arguments occur over nothing, over minor things, or what used to be minor.
Even you and George discussed this the other day. I remember on Coast to Coast, you've discussed this on various shows, that people are genuinely irritated, aren't they?
Yeah. They really are.
And they're so irritable. I mean, my guess would be, A, they've got terrible diets, and B, they've got terrible economic situations that just piles on tons of stress on them.
Well, that coupled with the news they get daily about, the war in the Middle East, the threat of nuclear war, how's that going to affect us? The deflation of the U.S. dollar, that's economic again. That hits them right in the pocketbook. So all these things that we've mentioned before, guys, is they're weighing heavy on the mind of the average person. And if they don't study the stuff like you and I do, it'll be a dark cloud hanging over. I mean, it's bigger than they can deal with. And they try to push it to the back of their mind, and they become grumpy.
Hey, and you know what? That's actually really funny that you say that, because I was talking with my brother last night about this, and he says, "Oh well, I don't want to know about this stuff. You know, I've got more important things to do." And he kind of got a little bit angry, kind of all of a sudden. And I was thinking to myself, "Hey, well, hold on a second. If this information is actually damaging to your consciousness, or if it freaks people out and makes people go nuts and all that kind of stuff, wouldn't we have copious quantities of upset truthers everywhere?" Whereas conversely, when I do meet new truthers who I haven't met before, they're usually really lovely people who are quite well adjusted to fabulous genocide.
Yeah, that's true. They are, though, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, we're all going to die, man, but what can you do about it? It's all good, you know? Party! Let's get a bottle of Karuba and hang out, bro.
I mean, it's sick. It's like that movie, like, Dusk Till Dawn or something. It's a bunch of vampires just partying till death. I'm sure people want out of life than that, really, but they just go into this default position. It's been programmed into their subconscious, whether they know it or not.
Well, no, I suggest that they get, of course, up here, this is in the United States, I suggest that they get lots of tequila and tequila margarita mix and, you know, some corn chips and a few peppers and cheese and stuff to have a real party. I mean, up here, that's party stuff.
That's what it is. I mean, it's total gratification of the senses.
This sounds like Dr. Strangelove at the end of the movie where the guy's going to ride the bomb.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, and of course now Strangelove himself, remember when his arm kept grabbing him by the throat and he was saying, you know, but if you think about it, we will be the ones who have 12 women to one man, you know. And we'll get all the goodies. And so the generals and the command staff are saying, "Hey, that's not a bad idea. Let's do that."
God, I mean, to me, it's not surprising everyone's under a spell. When, you know, you look at the way cities are planned, you look at just from an architectural point of view, you look at the United States and the Washington Monument, you look at the Texas Capitol and that big Diana temple they've got there, and it's just like an open-air occult temple. You know, and they've got squares in every town, and they've got all these significant Neolithic points, you know, and it's just like, to me, it's just like, oh, well, it's an open-air ritual chamber. And everyone, you know, all the flocks are pretty much just Satanists in the sense that looking to gratify senses and senses only, and it's a five-sense world, and that's it.
Willie, being serious for a moment, not partying and stuff, but being serious, what is the opposite to the satanic type signs and symbols and groups? What is the opposite side of that paradigm?
The opposite side is consciousness, I suppose.
Well, what about Christianity or, you know, the Judeo-Christian ethic? Isn't that the opposite to the satanic type things?
Well, totally, but it only comes to consciousness because people won't understand. People can't contemplate their own origin without a level of consciousness of themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first step.
And I'd say the antithesis to all this kind of satanic stuff, I mean, as you say, Stan, would most likely be Christianity, but I'm also conscious of the fact that many Christians have no idea about this type of agenda.
I think a proper way to say it would probably be those who follow the way that Yeshua ben Elohim, or Jesus Christ, laid down for us. And I don't think a lot of the so-called Christian organizations and churches do that.
You could yell out Yeshua in most churches, and you would get no response from people.
I know, but there's a small segment of us across the planet that do, you know, respect Yeshua ben Elohim, or in other words, in English, would be Joshua, son of God, but it's really Jesus, right? And we study the Hebrew because we want to get to as close as we can to the original written word without anybody interfering or putting their spin on it. And there are a lot of us, well, I say a lot, there's quite a few of us doing that, and we don't have an official church or anything. We just talk with each other over the internet or the phone and what we find. And it amazes us. I mean, it's like you say, if you do go into a church and yell, Yeshua, and they're going to go, what's wrong with you? Are you coming to the party tonight? We're having a band tonight and a social gospel.
Yeah, it's all music. It's all music. You can't criticize the government because, you know, that's in Romans 13, and you can't do this and you can't do that. And I see them in my local town and in every town, and they're just controlled Benny Hinn style.
I mean,
it's real sick.
I mean, they say, you say Yeshua and they say bless you.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's all kind of just like feel good, phony, no different than, I mean, a lot of them go to yoga and all the new age stuff at the same time. That's how.
Oh, that's, you know, look, you know I, what I mean? I don't claim to be the be all end all understanding of everything about the Creator and our relationship with Him through His Son, but I'm willing to learn. I'm like a child, a student, and if someone brings me a new idea from the writings or scripture or whatever, then I will look at it and try to analyze what I think I know. But I'm looking forward to the day when I do meet the king of this world, the rightful king, Yeshua. And I'm going to probably be real surprised at the reality of what all this really was and is, because so many hands have gotten into the mix and written things through the ages that we have concepts that pull this way and pull that way. And so I'm prepared to be surprised when he says, look, here's how it really went down, and here's where it's going, and don't worry, you know. So,
and you mean, you said it right there, though. I mean, that's a total different mindset between their cult and their followers, and, you know, the antithesis of that. I mean, you said like a student, someone who's willing to learn, like a child, whereas you notice all these occult groups and their followers being, you know, a lot of people in society today, it's all, I'm the master of the universe, I'm a man god, I'm the creator of my own destiny, and me only, I this, I that, and, you know, then they go from 180 to 360 on the compass, and they think they literally become grand designer architects of this reality.
Yeah, I hear you. That's
and they're
true.
Totally arrogant. They're on sick power trips, and they're totally arrogant. And the average person, I see it as a form of arrogance to deny creation, or the idea of creationism, just out of hand, just totally out of hand, deny it. Because even if you have an interventionist theory of aliens, where'd the aliens come from? It's always
right.
It always leaves the question, doesn't it?
Well, you know, look, I understand, looking at the Hebrew, there's some things that are difficult to translate this many millennia after they were written. And the first line in Genesis, which is called Bereshit or Bereshit in Hebrew, the first line says, V'ha'eretz tohu vohu, and that means, and the earth had become waste and void from a previous state where it was not waste and void. Now, I don't have a problem with that because I think that the creation story in the Garden of Eden story was talking about this age of man on the planet and the restructuring of the planet. And we could have an older Earth, you know, that perhaps Satan was here on the Earth living and dwelling with other beings from wherever the heavens are. And I think there are probably parallel universes that they inhabit, because they call them like levels of heaven. And so I'm not upset by having an older Earth and geological strata and sediments that are older than, you know, 6,000 years. But again, I'm not pedantic. I believe everything has a creator behind it, because there's intelligent design throughout all that we can see and sense in the universe. So beyond that, who died and left anyone in charge of the truth, you know? I mean, we're all doing our best to try to understand from the records that we have.
Yeah,
and I think
it is interesting, though, within the United States, sort of how it's done a slow fade-out from God being taken out of different public places like courthouses, to Obama not using a Bible, to the Word of God being taken out of different venues. So it's like a slow fade-out.
They still won't take off the "In God We Trust" on the dollar bill, though.
No, because it's their God. It's their God, though.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the interesting thing, that when you get into these types of debates and it regards God and things of that nature, that you've got all these secular sort of people who believe in climate change and then love the government and think that they can do no wrong and that kind of thing. They get instantly very angry and say, oh, you're talking about creationism. That's just insane. Saying, you know, it's like, well, hold on a second. Who appointed you God? Okay, if you're saying God has no playing in everything, and you're saying that I can't talk, doesn't that make you? Do you think that you're the Almighty here in this conversation, buddy? Otherwise, F off.
I mean, we didn't evolve from plants. Okay, we didn't evolve from plants,
no.
But then you go out into the forest. I dare these people just to go out and look at things really, really closely, and you see how many plants imitate paint just as your hands and feet do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think I evolved out of a weed plant, but anyway.
Well, I think what we see definitely is intelligent design, where systems have been designed to interact together from the start. Because otherwise, if they tried to evolve to that state, they would self-destruct. I mean, there's beetles and various other things. You can see that. And there's also, you know, evidence that a lot of the things that they say has, the geologists say, has taken millions of years for sediment to build up, they can't explain why there is a tree fossil growing up through 100 million years of layers. You know, it just doesn't happen that way. It's catastrophic.
I mean, if you really think about survival of the fittest, it doesn't lead to a total ecosystem of what was it? What was the word I was looking for? Of just everything working together in harmony.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I find interesting about modern-day society is it's not survival of the fittest, it's survival of the something that rhymes with fittest.
Yes, what would that be?
Like the scum rise to the top, it starts...
Yeah.
It's basically fittest, except instead of the F, you've got an SH. The scum rise to the top, and whoever is the most deceptive person who cares the least about the human condition, who is a more vapid and facile, they are the ones that survive and thrive. And if you're a good person and you keep your head down and you work really hard and you try to raise children properly with certain types of ethic and all of that, you are almost doomed to failure in this world. The game has been rigged to ensure that only those who cheat can win.
I mean, it's real easy to pick holes in all religions and spiritual beliefs and everything else. It's really, really easy because there are so many straw men, and you know, the first one being, oh, religion caused all the wars and everyone's dead because of religion, and they don't know that Adolf Hitler wasn't really a Catholic. He was a member of the Thule and Vril Society, who was a complete scumbag. He was a little fallen child of the occult here. Probably an element, anyway, won't go into his background, but the hypocrisy in the secular crowd is that, though, regardless of us working our way to the top of the order of the species, supposedly, if you follow the order of the species, as Darwin would put it, regardless of us working as a natural being, working our way to the top and being able to dominate pretty much any other organism on this planet, other than the planet itself, they hate, secular people hate humans, and they say we interfere with a natural system and then don't include us in a natural system. That's a huge hypocrisy. Huge, total flawed hypocrisy there. It just makes me laugh, you know. Like,
you know, yeah. Well, look, you know, I've had several arguments or discussions that were heated with physicists trying to tell me, you know, the order of things and that I'm all wrong. And when I challenge them, when they say they're defending their position on an issue that's scientific in this case, but also with theologians, I say, well, what do you base your opinion on? You know, what is the truth you accept? Well, I stand on the doctrine of such and such who wrote this book and did that and said this. I said, but have you done the work that he did to check it at all? No, but I said, well, all right, here's what's happened. You have chosen to accept what you have read in the books you've been exposed to, or the lectures, or whatever. You have chosen to accept that as the truth of what you're espousing now. I said, so may I suggest this? Choose wisely, my friend. And that's it. And it leaves him kind of with a blank stare, because, you know, we all choose what we're going to accept as the truth. Be sure you choose the truth.
I mean, they say the Bible is just written by man. I mean, it's just written by man. But then all the books they trust in, who are they written by?
Man.
You know, but they can't use that same standard.
I know. I had a discussion with one guy about Doctor Who. You've seen Doctor Who, right?
Yeah.
Time machine and all that kind of stuff. Okay. He can travel through time, back, forwards, and whatever. And I had a discussion with one scientist once, one physicist, and I said, do you think time travel is possible? Yeah. All right. I said, is there a God? He says, no, I don't believe there's a God, but time travel, we'll develop it someday because of such and such's equation. I said, yeah, you're probably right. You know, I said, you know, think about this. If there was no God, then the moment that that man gets into that time cabinet and escapes, he has the ability to perpetuate himself, to make his life extend by going to the future, the past, whatever the technology needs, and suddenly there always was a God. And then I leave them to sip on their drink and look puzzled.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they should think about, rather than the origin of the species, maybe they should think about the origin of any single thought and how, you know, they've wired people's brains up to all manner of contraptions and tried to break it down in a scientific manner, and thought systems seem to appear out of the ether, literally.
Well, I tell you what, they do, but in my case, I've certainly been blessed in my youth to be able to ask questions about how something works and then go to sleep and many times get a dream movie that would be like, say, a flying saucer. How do flying saucers work? And then the good Lord or some source out there would say, you know, produce a three-dimensional color working CAD-CAM model of a saucer taking itself apart, and I could say, I want to see inside, and I'd be small, then I'd go up inside to see how it worked, and it would show me all these things. Now, where does that come from? I mean, I'd never seen such a thing. Somebody out there, something, is definitely still feeding us, even if it's our average thought or, you know, the stimulus for our average thought, which that was for me. Weird, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was still thinking about thought control, mind control, and all these sort of things. And you know, some people, when they hear that, they think, oh, somebody sitting in a chair with a big screen in front of them, you know, like Clockwork Orange type thing. But when I think mind control, I think watching the news, I think watching mainstream television, I think going to school, I think going to university, I think listening to politicians. You know, that's all that it is. It's very simple because it's all real world. Kind of stuff, you know. If you teach people not to think, you can teach them to be obedient.
They want to be normal. They don't want to upset their peers. And so it just generally leads to lowest common denominator. The only things they can then talk about are the weather and the beach is nice and it's sunny today and this, that, and the other. Everything else that could possibly lead to controversy or disagreement has to be left out.
That's peer pressure. It's peer pressure. My own daughter deals with it every day, gentlemen. And it's about being different or having independent thought or being creative, you know?
Yeah. I got that a lot in Australia when I was over there because they have the tall poppy syndrome. You're familiar with that?
Yeah, we're very familiar with it here in New Zealand, which is the difference between New Zealand and Afghanistan, because over there they really love tall poppies because you don't have to kneel down so far to bleed them.
You know, it's like a gang, you know, and everyone, most mainstream people I know, they're like, oh, you know, stupid gang members wearing patches and they have their little hand signs and their own little code and meet in their own little places. And I just think to myself, I'm like, yeah, how do you live your life?
Yeah, you
watch those movies, you love that fashion, you read those magazines, you watch those TV programs. You're in a gang too, you know?
Yeah, man, they have to smoke cigarettes in order to get their patch, you know? I mean, it's just pathetic armchair scum.
But, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, they can't see how they are initiating themselves into a mindless gang. It happens to be a lot bigger than the small ones they pick on. And so they call it normality.
Yeah, I think we could all do with a dose of helping others, doing unto others if we would have them do to us instead of looking at I, me, do what I say type stuff, you know, or feed me or entertain me, but help others, you know, and if we would all just pull together it'd work, but I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, we're
and it's not communism either, is it? It's individuals helping individuals, really. It doesn't have to be organized under a common banner of government or anything.
It can be as simple as opening a door for an old lady. In fact, I had an old lady open the door for me. I don't know what that means, but yes.
I know why. The old lady had a polar ice shift, and she realized that you were the key to knowing where she would be after the shift completes.
Well, that works. That works.
Yeah. Well, I got a theory why the world's going so crazy is you suddenly developed a mental disorder called bipolar.
Oh, I get it.
Oh, God.
I didn't.
I have some Paxil you can take for that, Vinny.
Well, NASA admit that the pole is moving 40 k's northwest every year and could be in Siberia by 2050, but don't worry, it won't affect the weather because the magnetic field doesn't affect the weather, according to NASA. That's one article I read anyway. I was like, really?
Oh, they are so wrong. I mean, there are many articles that tell you that the ionosphere is linked to the telluric or earth currents that flow from the equator at night and from the polar toward the equator during the day, and that these currents drive thunderstorms and things, and if those currents are disturbed by the magnetic field in the core of the earth, it changes the whole weather pattern. They're wrong. That's just wrong. It's published work that they use themselves. They know better than that.
Yeah, that was Fox News putting up an article from NASA saying, yeah, don't worry, it has nothing to do. And I was thinking of myself, like, doesn't the ionosphere affect cosmic radiation that gets through? And doesn't that see cloud?
Yeah.
And doesn't that, Yeah. Doesn't that drive storms?
Look, a few years back, not long ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago, there was an increase in the South Atlantic anomaly in the ionosphere, and it weakened over a larger area and hit part of the islands in northern part of South America, I think it was. Anyway, we had calls come in, phone calls and emails from people there who said that their children were coming home with nausea and blisters on their skin from this radiation that got through the hole in the ozone layer because of this magnetic anomaly in the South Atlantic. And it let more of the normal radiation that's out there get through. And, people said that the skin they could feel out in the sun on that island there near the equator, they could feel like pinpricks in their skin. And this is from the radiation that was hitting. I mean, they're wrong. The unpublished reports should prove that. I mean, I just can't believe they'd say that.
Well, it's the interesting thing. When we say we can't believe it, or if we say, how can that happen, we actually already know the answer, don't we? And we just don't want the answer to be true. So we ask a question anyway, hoping that somebody will give us a different one, one that's more palatable.
That sounds like a good answer. Yeah, probably so.
Yeah. I just wonder sometimes who all these little agents are scurrying around the place. I mean, I'd just really like to be able to see them one day. You know, you get to the end of the movie and you find out who the real bad guy was. I mean, sometimes I just want that, you know. It's like, yeah. I can have my suspicions. I can have, you're halfway through. Is it him? Is it that character? But you never really know for sure, do you?
Well, that's the O. Henry twist, isn't it? O. Henry was an author that always had a surprise ending.
Okay, yep.
Mm, and I'm sure the world will have a great surprise ending as well.
The grand finale.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to do this again as things develop, guys. I need to get the information from all these testers. It'll probably be several weeks before I've got it organized and get it into a map and stuff to show what people are seeing. This is what the Amateur Science Club is like.
Well, at least you know that on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, it's always the lighter side of genocide, Stan.
That I do.
Well, wrapping up here, Stan, I mean, we'd love it if you would come on the show on a semi-regular basis or whenever you can to give us updates on this polar shift phenomenon because, there are very few people there with credibility like yours that any news source would readily identify and very few even further that they would ever interview and get information out to the public of this nature.
Well, I will try to do that, Vinny. I thank you for the invitation. I've talked to Mitch about that, and what I'll try to do is when there's something of value and importance to impart, I will certainly contact you guys, and we'll get on the air and do it. Certainly where you live, that's an area that I watch every day, and when I see something that's threatening down there, I'll let you know.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, Stan Deo, ladies and gentlemen, from standeo.com. And, this has been a very special edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. You can check out the archives of the radio show at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com and also AmericanFreedomRadio.com. So, I'd like to thank you very much, Stan, for coming on the show with us today.
Well, I enjoyed the mirth. It kind of lifted the haze around here. This dark thing that comes with all the bad news. But, we'll do it again.
Well, like Doctor Who, laugh in the face of annihilation, I always say.
Yeah, I love the series. It's got a lot of good message in it.
Well, thank you. All right. See you later, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye-bye.